It's 1 o'clock. I'm Fred Martino. Coming up next on Voice of the Public, we'll take your calls for Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center in Las Cruces. At this week's press conference, Acting Health Secretary Dr. David Scrace got emotional when he talked about the impact of health workers during the pandemic.
Just can't say enough about how much we in state government appreciate all you've done.
With ICUs near capacity, what is it like working in a hospital during the pandemic? What do you need to know about the latest information on COVID-19? We'll have it all for you with Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center coming up next right here on Voice of the Public. Stay with us. Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. I'm Fred Martino. Thanks so much for being with us. Our guest today is Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center in Las Cruces. We're going to take your calls for the hour, and we're going to get to her in just a moment. But before we do, I want to bring you up to date on a number of developments related to the pandemic that we're just hearing about today. Today, the Centers for Disease Control released some encouraging news. It's nice to start with some good news here. And that is that new cases were down 13% compared to the last seven-day period. So hopefully this will become a trend. Maybe it's too early to tell that, but we will keep an eye on those numbers and, of course, bring you the latest here on KRWG Radio and at KRWG.org. You may have seen another story online this morning or heard even in the last hour during Here and Now about another major development just coming out today, and that is that drug maker Merck says that its experimental COVID-19 drug reduced hospitalizations and deaths by half in people recently infected with the coronavirus. It's potentially a leap forward in the global fight against the pandemic. The company said today that it will soon ask health officials in the U.S. and around the world to authorize the drug's use. A decision from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration could come within weeks after that. If cleared, the drug would be the first pill shown to treat COVID-19. Now, all COVID-19 therapies right now authorized in the U.S. require an IV or an injection. A caution, of course, the results have not been peer-reviewed by outside experts. An independent group of medical advisors, though, monitoring the trial, recommended stopping the trial early because the interim results were so strong. Nice to start this program with some good news. And as I mentioned, our guest is someone who has joined us a number of times over the last year and a half. It's Dr. Dolores Gomez. She is with Memorial Medical Center in Las Cruces. Dr. Gomez, it is great to have you with us as always.
Thank you so much, Fred. It's good to be back.
So you heard this news. Let's start with the CDC today saying that cases are down 13% nationally. What's your reaction to that news?
Well, definitely. Once again, it's very refreshing to know that maybe we're going to be getting some relief around the country with that drop in cases. You know, I think for the last several weeks, we've seen kind of the slow down trend. But to see a pretty significant drop in this last week has been, I think, a breath of fresh air for the medical community as a whole.
I'm sure. And then the other big news today from Merck, that it may have found a drug as opposed to an IV or an injection, an actual pill that can be used to treat people who have been recently infected with the coronavirus. Really dramatic results that they're releasing, saying it reduced hospitalizations and deaths by half, by 50%. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's really good news. And I, like you said, I think it's very timely given today's conversation. Yeah, the drug's name is called molnupiravir. So again, it's another kind of an immune modulator type medication. It's an RNA analog. And yeah, they like you said, they stopped the study in the phase 3 trial a little bit early. They were able to look at about 775 patients. Now, the caveat with this is, like you said, we have had IV therapies, the monoclonal antibodies that we can use, but this is a pill that now in people who have started with symptoms within a five-day window, they saw that the requirement for hospitalization or death in those taking the medicine was only about 7% versus 14% for those that were on the placebo trial. So I think it's definitely good news. Now, it's still for mild to moderate disease. It's not in the patient that's already hospitalized, but it may be something that helps prevent those hospitalizations, just like our monoclonal antibodies have done, but it's available in the pill form. So that's great news to hear.
Very encouraging, and we need all the encouraging news we can get with this pandemic. We had that short moment a couple of months back where we thought we were kind of coming out of this, and then we had this enormous Delta surge. And this week with the positive news here in New Mexico, actually, more positive than many places around the country in terms of the rate of people who are vaccinated and the rate of people who are hospitalized. So lower in terms of hospitalizations, higher in terms of vaccinations in New Mexico. But even with that good news, Dr. David Scrace, the health secretary right now for New Mexico, said that intensive care unit capacity is still very low statewide. Give us a sense of the situation in Las Cruces.
Yeah, so I think for us, we continue to remain fortunate that our numbers capacity-wise, from where we were back in end of October, November of last year, our capacity is not as bad. But what we're seeing is kind of the staff requirement has really changed. You know, you've heard about everybody just being very tired and fatigued with this. So a lot of our medical staff have either moved on to places where maybe doing travel care, where they're paid a little bit more, or people who decided after all of this that, you know, maybe they want a different career. So from a staffing percentage, that part has been a little bit more concerning. So even though we may not have the same number of cases, being able to provide care because we have staffing issues is a current concern nationwide, and definitely here in Las Cruces, that's not an exception in any way. I think the other part with what we do see in the ICU is, by and large, again, following national trends, the majority of those patients that are in our ICU setting are unvaccinated, that's kind of been a little bit of kind of a negative response to our medical staff, because we all know that there's ability to kind of avoid this continued infection, but having to still, you know, take care of these very, very sick patients when there was opportunity, hopefully, by taking the vaccine to help. So there's a little bit of not just capacity issues, there's staffing issues, and I think that mental toll is definitely different right now than it was a year ago.
We're talking with Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center, and we are anxious to hear from you. If you have a question for Dr. Gomez, give us a call right now at 575-646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. Well, this week, Acting Health Secretary Dr. David Scrace got choked up, Dr. Gomez, when he talked about what you were just referring to, all of the sacrifices being made by health workers.
I really want to thank every person who has helped in any way to provide care for patients in New Mexico over the past 18 and a half months. And I want you to know that our hearts really go out to you now. I know it's tougher now, I know you're working harder now, and I know the emotional toil of treating preventable illness is higher than it was when we were treating unpreventable illness with very little treatment. And so I thank you. I encourage our media partners to talk to more of you and hear your stories, and just can't say enough about how much we in state government appreciate all you've done.
Dr. Scrace getting emotional there, talking about the toll that this is taking. Dr. Gomez, give me a sense of this in your experience, and specifically what he said, and he really emphasized this in the press conference this week, that the toll is even more difficult right now because our health workers are seeing people in the hospital, maybe very little hope that they'll survive, and knowing that the situation was preventable had they gotten a vaccine.
Yeah, and I can see why he gets a little choked up about that. I think we've all kind of experienced exactly what he was trying to say there, because it is different right now than it was a year ago, because at that point, you know, we're still learning about the disease process. We didn't have an option until December to say, you know, there is something available right now that could help prevent this. And so I think right now that frustration and that emotional toll of having to do this again, you know, having this, you know, in some places this is the third or fourth surge, you know, definitely for us, you know, second surge. And knowing that there could have been something, you know, to prevent this person to have to be here. And it's hard. It is hard for our frontline staff to have to see that every day. And the added toll to that is a lot of these patients are still walking in denying what's happening to them. And their family members, they just have these staunch beliefs that what's going on isn't real, or I don't want to do it. I'm afraid to get vaccinated, or, you know, it's going to cause some terrible disease down the road. And I think that's where the frustration and the emotional fatigue is happening right now. And so I can definitely feel for what Dr. Scrace is saying, and even him not being on that front line, he hears it. And, you know, he's trying to do what's best. I think our state is trying to do what's best. I think the United States is trying to do what's best, but still having to deal with that emotional toll and that anger that is here right now is why everybody is feeling the way they are.
Yeah. Dr. Dolores Gomez is with Memorial Medical Center in Las Cruces, and we would love to hear from you. We'll take your calls at 646-2212. That's 646-2212. This is something that we really try to bring you on a regular basis, the latest on the pandemic, and a chance for you to talk with someone who is on the front lines, who sees what's going on. And Dr. Gomez, as you know, one of the things that we've been hearing occasionally on NPR and other national news outlets is that there are some places around the country where you've seen some health workers resigning rather than being vaccinated themselves. And this is certainly a very small percentage of health workers. But I wanted to find out from you if this is a concern in Memorial and in Las Cruces.
Yeah, you know, given our governor's, when she put out her public health order, I believe now it was end of August, I believe it was, where she said, you know, that we want our frontline workers to be vaccinated. And if they aren't, they have to have a medical or a religious exemption. But even within that, then you would be required to have testing. I think, again, from a public health standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. I think in those that are really you know, paying attention to the science and that behind it, that it would make sense to be vaccinated. So, you know, I think in our minds, this is a simple solution. But, you know, there were staff here in Las Cruces who really did not feel like that's what they wanted to do. I think we were very fortunate that we were able to work with those that still hadn't been vaccinated, either by providing that medical exemption or that religious exemption. But, you know, luckily we only had a handful who made the decision to say, well, then maybe this isn't going to be how I'm going to move forward. And I know that the sense is that, you know, it's such a hard line stance. But, you know, the other news today, too, Fred, I don't know if you saw, is we did surpass today the 700,000 mark of deaths in the United States from this this pandemic. And I wish that number, you know, could really open up some eyes, but it's not enough still. And so you know, yes, people have made the decision to move on from their career.
Dan, when you hear a number like that, 700,000 people in this country alone who have died from COVID-19, you have to wonder, when we have data like that, and we also have data that shows the effectiveness and safety of the vaccine, what else can be done to convince people who are holding out, who still haven't gotten vaccinated?
I think, again, like you said, the emotional toll that this plays on kind of medical providers is difficult. But I think we have to continue to provide that education to those that are still, you know, struggling with that decision to be vaccinated or not. I think we have to try to stay as open-minded as we can to kind of listen to those stances and try to move them in a direction of where are the reliable resources and the education that really explain why this is such an important part. And I think I've said this over and over, and every time I've come on to do this, is this is truly a public health issue. It is nothing more than that. That's what I try to do when I can. But, you know, I'm not successful, even when I'm talking to my own patients, to try to find out why they haven't done this yet. But we just have to continue to do whatever we can to get those that are still hesitant to understand.
Yeah, I was so pleased this week that the University of New Mexico had put out a story, which we put on our website and we shared it on Facebook. And it was talking about in northern New Mexico, an entire family that contracted coronavirus, including some very young children in the family. And they were in the hospital. They allowed their pictures to be taken in the hospital, showing that even with this Delta variant and how it's spreading much more quickly, that we're seeing more young people who are hospitalized. And despite some misconceptions, misinformation out there, that young people can get seriously ill from coronavirus. And so I thought it was very important to share that. And I was pleased to see that a lot of people were looking at that story on our website.
Yeah, I think those personal stories definitely will, they're not going to change all the minds, but if you can even just change a few, I think that's important. And I read that story, and I know there was the father who said, you know, gosh, if I could go back in time, you know, I would have done this right away, and has plans to get vaccinated, you know. So even if you can take those that have been skeptical and kind of let them put their story out, if it can just change a few more minds to get this vaccine, I think just anything we can do is important.
Absolutely. Dr. Dolores Gomez from Memorial Medical Center in Las Cruces joining us, and we would love to hear from you, your questions for Dr. Gomez. You can call in right now, Phone lines are open, 575-646-2212. That's 646-2212 to call in with your questions. We've really hit folks, I think, Dr. Gomez, with a lot of new information, and so the phone lines have been quiet. That doesn't surprise me, actually, because that's what happens on shows like this. People are just listening, and they're not thinking about asking a question right away because there's so much to listen to. You know, I don't want this show to end without really emphasizing as well, we're talking about a lot of bad news, but also that there is good news, and particularly good news in New Mexico. As I mentioned earlier in the show, if you're just joining us, a federal map showed that our state was in the green, and of course, green means good when it comes to vaccination rates that are higher than the national average, and rates of people admitted to the hospital with COVID lower than the national average. Here is Acting Health Secretary Dr. David Scrace talking about this good news this week.
Let me just tell you that green is really good. Green means a high vaccination rate and a low hospitalization rate. And so even though we are struggling and our ICUs are full, we still have a much lower percentage of people in our state being admitted to hospitals than other states do. And so New Mexico is almost completely green, and you have to go fly a really long way to get to another. You have to go all the way to New England to find states that are completely green. And so I'm really proud of our team for this. I'm really proud of the people who've worked so hard, such long hours. I'm really proud of the media who've helped us in this effort, get the word out. I'm proud of all New Mexicans who've contributed to the effort by wearing masks or getting vaccinated or keeping your distance in a way that prevents the spread of COVID. And so, you know, these surges are week after week of press conferences with data that some people might think are depressing. And it's important to me to celebrate our successes. And we should just all, just for a moment, consider the role each of us has played as an individual in turning New Mexico green. And on this map where green is very, very good.
I thought it was important to share that message that we should look at that, and we should feel good about people coming together despite, you know, that we hear bad news, people coming together to try to prevent the spread of COVID, and realizing that when you're dealing with public health, you have to think about society, not just yourself, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. With our recent 9/11, you know, not celebrating, but recognizing the anniversary of September 11th, and there was a lot of sentiment out there about, you know, how we came together as a community and, you know, as a nation as a whole about saying, you know, we're here to take care of each other. That's what we're about. I would love for that same sentiment to be thought of right now, because that really is what it is. It's not just taking care of me. It's, you know, it's my neighbor. It's the friend that I've had for years and years who has, comorbid issues that puts them at risk, is really trying to look at that perspective from that standpoint, that it's not just me, it's those around me, and how we could be farther along if we would just look at it that way. You know, we're at 72%, I think, was announced yesterday for 1+ vaccinations in New Mexico. I mean, that's outstanding. But gosh, you know, we could be at 90% by now. We could have the whole U.S. be at that point if we could really just look at it from that community perspective and who we are as a people and how we're there to take care of each other.
Yeah. I wanted to mention that because Dr. Fauci, I'm sure you've heard him on numerous occasions talk about this issue and thinking about society, not just thinking about yourself. It's so important, and it's the mindset that we need to talk about. And quite frankly, it deals with more than just public health issues. It's something in our country that we have to confront as a nation, that we think about the consequences for society in terms of public policy and personal decision-making. 646-2212. That's 646-2212. Your questions for Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center. And we have our first caller, Laura, is on the line. Hi, Laura.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for your service, Dr. Gomez, and for all medical providers and health providers out there. I know I have a sister that took the decision. We're all vaccinated, by the way, but took the decision to just step away from the profession for a while. It's been overwhelming for all of you, so I really thank you for those that are out there and helping us out. And so this is my question. I understand the topic is directly deals directly with COVID and vaccination. I'm wondering, as a professional, medical professional, for those of us, and those of us that are not yet vaccinated, what lifestyles do you propose or do you encourage us to have? So if we do, God forbid, come down with COVID, we can mitigate some of the effects. What have you seen, your observations of the people that fare better once they catch the disease? What kind of lifestyles have they led or are leading that make recovery easier and faster? And so I really am looking forward to hearing your recommendations of lifestyle.
Well, thank you for the question. I would say even outside of COVID, there's a lot of awesome lifestyle changes that we all could make in general. But where we do see that those that tend to get severe disease are going to be those that have other conditions that are going to make them sicker. Some of the biggest ones that we have seen in general is obesity. That's probably one of the top kind of comorbid conditions that will lead you to more severe disease. Those with diabetes as well is definitely in there. And then also anybody with any kind of immune compromised state. So those that have cancer, those with autoimmune processes that lower your immune system are those that are most at risk. Now, you know, if I have cancer, I can't necessarily fix that, but you know, being out, exercising, eating healthier, you know, getting your disease under control for diabetes, getting your blood sugars improved, those things can make a huge difference in your lifestyle in general, but definitely from getting severe disease from COVID, that has a huge impact if you can keep those things under control. So those that are healthier definitely are going to fare better. But again, this COVID-19 also doesn't discriminate against anybody. So unfortunately, we've seen even very healthy people get this. So, you know, those things that we can do just not even to get sick is still very important. And again, that emphasis on the vaccine, that emphasis on wearing masks if you're going to be indoors or you're going to be in close quarters with people, the social distancing need, washing the hands, that has not changed throughout this whole pandemic.
Okay. Laura, any go ahead.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I absolutely hear you. Thank you so much, Dr. Gomez. And more specifically, you know, I heard your cofactors, the people that suffer most. And of course, anyone that's healthy, good health, athletes can get colds, and you know, any of us can you know, become affected with, you know, some major autoimmune diseases like such as cancer. But specifically, lifestyles and exercise, getting some vitamin D, going under the sun for a little while. In particular, what kind of eating, you know, do you recommend? I mean, I guess I'm asking for more specificity if you can provide it, and if not, that's perfectly fine. I mean, I went from the obese level to the overweight level, and I'm like 1 point away within normal range. That was my proactive stance on it. You know, my glucose level is way down too, and blood pressure is within normal range. So I understand, and it's taken me a while, months, but it's been done.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what I'm asking. I think a lot of people will be hearing you and your message, and if you can be more specific, you know, more directed, like this amount of exercise, this type of eating habit, that I think would be really, really helpful for the general population, for all of us that, hear our doctors and want to follow and you know, just be healthier. I think that's probably most of us.
Okay.
So again, I thank you so very much.
Thank you, Laura, for calling in. I really appreciate that. And, of course, Dr. Gomez, this goes without saying, but we do need to say it, that, you know, the reason for some generality here would be that, you know, without clinical trials, we can't know definitively, right, that vitamin D, for instance, is going to reduce the chances that you're going to have serious illness from COVID. We can't know a particular type of food without a clinical trial. But we can say that eating healthier, lowering our saturated fats and the so-called Mediterranean diet, we know that that's healthy not just for overall health, but for other reasons besides COVID that have nothing to do with COVID.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And congratulations to Laura and what she's done for herself. I mean, that's amazing because it isn't easy. And I think she said something very important there is that it takes months. It's not going to be, you know, you're going to do this and in 2 weeks you're going to be there. I think sometimes, unfortunately, in the U.S., we want that quick pill and that quick fix. And, you know, that doesn't only relate just in general, but it has related to COVID, where we've heard people are trying to find what's that quick fix that's going to keep me from getting ill, the whole ivermectin issues and things like that. But you're right, just in general, things we can do, and this goes back to my family medicine background, which I love the question, you know, more whole foods, more fresh fruits and vegetables, stay away from processed foods. We need to be exercising at least 30 minutes most days of the week. That's what's going to make a difference and have us be healthier. We're going to feel better. Vitamin D can come naturally just by being outside. You know, we don't have to be in front of our computer all the time or in front of the TV. You know, get outside, be active. And even activity can be just walking, and that's okay. That's a good start to kind of moving down that healthy pathway.
Such good advice. And we would love to hear from you. If you have other questions for Dr. Gomez, call us now at 646-2212. That's 646-2212 on Voice of the Public. And we have another caller now. Dan is joining us. Hi, Dan.
Yes. Hello. Thank you for running this program today and for Dr. Gomez and Dr. Scracy and all of the people involved. I just wanted to tell you that I think the actual mortality from COVID is probably twice what's reported, simply because we have an awful lot of indirect mortality from the COVID thing. And I would relate a personal example. My wife had a fall in November, and she was taken immediately to one of our two hospitals, I won't say which one, in Las Cruces, and they only had two people in the emergency room. This was Saturday night, and her papers came with her. We kept them, you know, all ready. If there were a medical emergency, the ambulance people delivered all of her paperwork. The paperwork got lost. The two people, there should have been over a dozen on duty, just the two. They were so besieged, and at COVID, you couldn't visit them, so I was told to wait and get a call. When I got there, she was already being brought up to go to El Paso for brain surgery. Well, when she got to there, they didn't have the paperwork either. And everything delayed until when she actually got surgery, it was too late.
Mm. So, I'm sorry to hear that, you know, Dan. And I understand your story. I mean, we've heard many stories like this where we have to realize that our hospitals are under great stress right now, so that because of COVID and other things that occur and people are brought to the hospital, it can be very difficult to care for people Dan, before we let you go, any other questions for Dr. Gomez?
Well, I'm just interested in the question of calculating the indirect mortality.
Yeah, very difficult.
All we hear about is the direct mortality from COVID.
Well, that's
I think that the indirect mortality is at least equal to the direct mortality. Yeah. So that was the focus of my reason for calling.
Well, thank you for that, Dan. And Dr. Gomez, I'll let you respond to that before we move on to the next caller.
Yeah, no, I think he's correct. I think especially with this surge currently, I think we've heard more about that. People who are coming in for non-COVID-related illnesses into our ERs or into the need for our ICU cannot get the care that we would normally be able to do because we have been inundated with those patients. So, you know, ventilators aren't available because they're being used by the COVID patients. So, you know, the critically ill person that walks in, you know, after a heart attack or those kinds of things may not get the service they need as emergently as they would be without this surge happening. So I think he's correct in saying that, you know, if there was a way to measure the indirect mortality that has occurred because of the amount of COVID patients that are in our hospitals, definitely, if you looked at that mortality rate, it's going to be higher than just by looking at the COVID-related deaths in and of themselves.
Sure. Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center, we will take your calls at 646-2212. That's 646-2212. Eric joins us now. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I wanted to thank Dolores for doing the show. It just is a coincidence that I was coming out from getting my booster on COVID. I'm a colleague of Dolores's from way back, and we both kind of had frontline seats through this whole pandemic. All I really wanted to do is send forth my plea that everybody that can get vaccinated. I know that Dolores has seen quite a bit, and my role, which was very different, I saw quite a bit of death this last year and a half, so... And I'm seeing young people in my clinic now come down with COVID. So just add a voice to the chorus for let's please get your vaccine.
Dr. Gomez?
Yeah, you know, he's being a little modest there. Eric absolutely is a colleague. We went to residency together and both trained in the program here in Las Cruces. But he also has been an integral part of this whole pandemic as well. He's one of our colonels in the National Guard and was somebody who really helped stand up a lot of clinics during our first surge and making sure these patients were taken care of. And, you know, he's right. You know, we need the vaccine. But he brought up another good point that I don't think we have talked about is boosters. And who is eligible for those and who should be getting those right now. So any of you that are out there that are over the age of 65, and if it has been at least 6 months since you got your second dose of your Pfizer vaccine, absolutely encouraging you to go get that. And now we have even a more extension of who qualifies if you have those underlying medical conditions like we talked about, or if you're working in high risk settings. So those that are in the healthcare field, you know, we're waiting for a good, hopefully a good number of those, but definitely, like he says, I think those that are still unvaccinated, I would gladly give you my booster if I know you can get that first shot in you. And I think that's still the important population that is definitely needs to be reached through all this.
And Eric, you're not alone. Michelle on Facebook was also encouraging people, if they are eligible, to get out there and get their booster shot. And, of course, encouraging anyone that's not gotten their first shot to go out and do that. Eric, thank you for calling.
Yeah, and I agree. Get the vaccine one way or the other, first or booster or second.
Absolutely. Thank you, Eric. And Dr. Gomez, we do need to mention at this time, you know, earlier you said the good news that, you know, New Mexico has one of the highest vaccination rates in the country, more than 70% of the population. But we also heard an urgent plea this week from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Very alarming that only 31% of pregnant women nationwide, 31%, were vaccinated as of mid-September. The rate was about 25% for Hispanic women, a little more than 15% for Black women. And doctors who treat COVID-stricken women during pregnancy are confronting old misconceptions and a lot of disinformation about vaccines and what is best for mother and child, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, we talked a lot about when vaccines first came out about vaccine hesitancy. And I think it's unfortunate that, you know, we're seeing that continued trend of who is it that is less vaccinated. And it again, is in our underserved population. It's in our population of color that we continue to see that issue because there are trust issues there. And getting that information to them and making sure they have that information so they can be well informed to know why the vaccine is important. I do know not that long ago, I think the state of Mississippi, outside of just the mom saying, I'm worried about the harm this could do to my baby, you know, is this going to be an issue? You know, they are a unit. So if mom's not well, baby's not going to be well. But in Mississippi, they actually are finding a higher rate of stillbirths occurring in those mothers who have contracted COVID. And so, again, we don't like to do scare tactics if we don't have to, but if you really kind of look at that information, getting that vaccine far outweighs the risk of the concern of, you know, is this going to do something to me or is this going to do something to my baby?
Yeah, and of course the CDC in making this plea this week to pregnant women to get vaccinated, especially with that rate only 31%. As of mid-September, they noted that the disease significantly raises the odds of needing ICU care, giving birth prematurely, and of dying. So this is just critical to talk about and note. I was surprised when I saw that number. I knew it was lower due to disinformation out there, but I was not aware that it was that low, that when you're talking about, 31%, that is, it's very, very alarming to see that. But we do continue to see, unfortunately, a lot of disinformation out there. And that's why we do shows like this, to try to raise awareness, and not just raise awareness, but encourage people to talk about this with loved ones and sometimes with people that they just meet. I was stunned, Dr. Gomez, recently because I was for my first time in Las Cruces. I've been here 13 years. I was in an unplanned situation with people I did not know. I had to go to jury duty. And while waiting for jury duty, while I did not participate in the discussion, I was overhearing the discussion of people in the room with me. Thankfully, I had an N95 mask on. And a large percentage of the people in the room with me waiting, not only had they not been vaccinated, but they were sharing amongst themselves false information about vaccines. And it was extremely alarming to me. It made me, as someone who is a director of content, all the more vigilant about getting the right information out there and getting it out there wherever we can. That's why I mentioned earlier, I shared that story from the University of New Mexico about the entire family coming down with coronavirus. I shared it on Facebook to get it out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think in a world now where there is information available at our fingertips, just, you know, going onto the web and finding things, it is very easy to go down a rabbit hole. And if you just kind of put in, you know, very simply, fertility and COVID vaccine, it's very easy to go down a hole with what looks like very reputable information, and it is wrong. And so people knowing where can I go to get the right resources to get this information, you know, I don't quite understand why there's this concern and this distrust for the CDC, but outside of the CDC, you can go to the World Health Organization, you can go to the National Institutes of Health. Those are very easy at your fingertip and get that information. Everybody loves Johns Hopkins, you know, Mayo. Those have great reputations. Go to those sites and read that information there. If you just don't feel like the CDC is going to give you what you want, there are so many good sites, but we cannot continue to go down these paths of finding information and then relaying that information and continuing to disseminate misinformation, just like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center in Las Cruces, your questions, we'll take them right now. You're running out of time if you want to get a question in. We have about 10 minutes left. So call now if you've been thinking about calling in. And the number is 646-2212. That's 646-2212. Charlie joins us now. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. Yeah. I had a hypothetical question. And this is going back to March of 2020 when the pandemic started and before we had any vaccines. And my hypothetical question is, and this is not practical, but if every person, at least every family, had used a mask and maintained 6-foot distance at that point in time, how would I, as a virus, as a coronavirus, have transmitted myself?
Good point, Charlie. Dr. Gomez.
That's a great question because, boy, if we could go back in time and just have everybody do that, I think we would be in a totally different situation than we are right now. We did see with mask wearing, with social distancing, with washing hands outside of COVID, what a difference we had in our flu season, in a lot of our pediatric infections that we would normally see during the fall and the winter, RSV, norovirus, all of those things. Those rates went way down. And I think you could definitely apply that to COVID-19. If you could do that hypothetical, we probably could have decreased the amount of COVID-19 infections just by doing that. And we probably wouldn't be where we are now because as that virus continues to spread, what did we see? We saw mutations. That's how we have the Delta variant right now. And viruses are trying to survive just like the rest of us. So they find ways to mutate and avoid the things that we put in place to kill them off. So I think we could have been in a very different place if we could have just had more of that happening when this all first started.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. And Charlie, thank you for that question, an important one for sure. We have another caller on the line now with a question. Eduardo joins us. Hi, Eduardo.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yes. My question is, we keep hearing about the skepticism among healthcare workers around the nation, and I'm just wondering if Dr. Gomez could comment on whether
skepticism about what?
Vaccination.
Okay. All right. And you're saying you want her to address healthcare workers who are skeptical about vaccination.
In our city.
Okay. Thank you for that, Eduardo. Dr. Gomez.
Yeah, I think some of it is very much what you hear in general. I think a lot of people are like, well, how... You know, this is so new. You know, what's going to be the long-term effect of this vaccine down the road? Some women, again, we talked about pregnancy a minute ago. You know, I'm pregnant. What effect is this going to have on my baby? I think the part, and I had the opportunity to speak to different healthcare workers who were, you know, skeptical about whether they wanted to do this or not. I think the things that are important, and I've heard this multiple times now, this vaccine has probably been the most researched vaccine out there. And I think everybody is stuck on the idea of how quickly it happened. And I guess the way I look at it is like, how amazing that we were able to do this as rapidly as we could and have
right.
the valid information behind it, I think is really the key within that.
Right.
And the technology
was not brand new. The mRNA technology in Pfizer and Moderna was something that had been worked on for a very long time. The specific formulation to go after preventing COVID was new, but not the mRNA technology.
Correct. And a vaccine also is very different than somebody who's taking a daily medicine, right? We know that we have to pay attention to side effects and long-term effects. What the vaccine is doing is it's acting on your own immune response. So why something like that would cause some effect in 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, whatever range that you want to put out there, doesn't really make a lot of sense overall, because it is the one time with maybe a booster, just like we do with the flu shot, just like we do when we have to get a booster for tetanus. And so that would be kind of what I would try to put out there as a narrative, and hopefully for those who are listening and still thinking about this, to really think about it from that perspective. I don't think we've had a vaccine that has been this well vetted ever.
Yeah, absolutely. 646-2212. You're running out of time to call in with a question for Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center in Las Cruces. We have Fred on the line now. Good to hear from another Fred.
Yes, hi. I'm Fred from Tularosa. And it's so odd. I got a call from my local hospital here, the Gerald Champion Regional Medical Center, because I refused to pay a bill for a COVID test in order for patients to get into the outpatient clinic to have, colonoscopies or injections or things like that. They require a COVID test within a couple of days, and now they're trying to charge me for that. Now, of course,
Fred, we should note, I don't want to run out of time here, we should note that there is free testing widely available in New Mexico. In fact, on our website, krwg.org, you can even click on a link to order an at-home test for free. Right. The state set that up a long time ago. But you're saying you had a test and they're charging you for it. And your question for Dr. Gomez?
My question is, shouldn't those tests, since those tests are really there in place to protect the other patients and the staff of the facility, the hospital facility, shouldn't they be free?
Okay, Dr. Gomez.
Well, I will say throughout this, the simple answer would be yes. Obviously, I think one of the reasons that somebody who's going in for a procedure to be done in order to protect staff, but also to protect the patient, because we do know we still do have people who may be asymptomatic or maybe at the start of this. If you're undergoing a procedure that's going to lower your immune system, your recovery and those things can be affected also if you are acutely ill, that these tests are being done. I wish I could say why they decided to do that. My guess is this was done as a screening test versus you're going in to get tested because you're having symptoms. Maybe they're putting that in a separate bucket, but overall, the test and they've said the testing, the booster, the vaccine in general is supposed to be free at this time. So I don't know. Maybe you need to talk to a few other people there to kind of help figure that out. I hope you're able to get that taken care of.
Absolutely. And Fred, thank you for calling. We appreciate that. Important information. The phones are closed right now because we're going to be ending the show very shortly. In our final few minutes here, Dr. Gomez, first I want to thank you for being so available over the last few years to regularly come on and answer questions. And second, I want to say, I want to know from you, we have about 2 minutes left, what is your secret for your strength? Because this, so many of us are struggling right now with this. I can't imagine how difficult it is for someone working in the medical field. What do you do to stay so strong?
Wow, that's a good question, because I can tell you there are some days I don't feel that way. Mm. I think the one thing that I think everybody needs to know is that, you know, when all this started, they talked a lot about us being healthcare heroes, and I think that is an awesome honor to hear that. But people need to realize that we're just as human as anybody else, and we have emotions. We get angry, we get sad, we cry with each other. We do what we can to cope through. But I think you just have to find that outlet. My outlet is running. My other outlet is having my kids and my husband, who are also kind of rocks for me as well, and being able to come home and talk to them a little bit about how this can be stressful. So, you know, you just have to find that outlet that's right for you. And, you know, I'm from Las Cruces as well, and I'm dedicated to this community, and I want to do whatever I can to help protect our community as much as possible. So I try to keep that in mind.
We appreciate you, Dr. Dolores Gomez of Memorial Medical Center. Stay strong, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you again.
So good to have her with us, and so encouraging, and such good advice to stay close to your loved ones, to exercise, to stay strong, and to continue to spread the news about the importance of thinking of each other, of thinking about keeping all of us safe at this time, and getting vaccinated, and now getting that booster shot. I'm Fred Martino. Thank you so much for being with us. Intermezzo coming up after the news.